digital marketer. Today, it's Becky Zeba.
Hello, and welcome to the Digital Marketer Podcast. I'm Jenna Snavely, one of your co-hosts. The coolest one. Don't tell Garrett I said that. Today, I'm excited because we're talking with Becky Zeba. She is the managing editor over here at Digital Marketer. What does that mean? Well, it means anything to do with the blog is hers and hers alone. I loved our conversation today. We talk a lot about content marketing, but even more just about how a single person, because yes, a single person runs our blog. Yeah, we talk a lot today about how a small force can be mighty and a little bit about how our strategy is updated in the last, even since January. So in the last 6 months or so. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. Here it is. Becky, hey.
Hi.
What's up?
Nothing much.
Welcome to the podcast room.
Thanks.
How are you feeling?
Feeling good. Yeah, good. I'm excited about this.
Good. So I wanted to bring you in here because, you know, Digital Marketer is known for its incredibly high standards of free blog content.
Well, that's good to hear.
And I wanted everyone to know, a lot of people who are listening right now, who are business owners, entrepreneurs, may want a content strategy that kicks ass, but their thoughts are, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to kind of talk about is how one single person, you're hearing this here first, one single person named Becky Zeba manages the entire blog pipeline at Digital Marketer.
Yeah. Yep.
Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, ever since about January.
Okay. And that's just what we're going to talk about today because it's possible. Is it possible, true or false?
I mean, it's currently happening.
It's happening.
So I would say it's definitely possible. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's easy. And you have to have a lot of outside resources mm-hmm. outside of yourself, but it's definitely doable and it's doable at a high quality.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start from what makes a good piece of content. What are you looking for when you're creating content? How do you plan what goes into the blog pipeline?
So we have a couple different types of posts, kind of two main calibers of posts on the DM blog. We have what we like to call casual content, which is a little more friendly, a little more, I wouldn't say entry level, but it's more broad in its mm-hmm. kind of content. But on the other hand, we also have our in-depth content, which is actually what we had significantly more of up until I started running the blog, mm-hmm. Which is stuff that honestly we could charge for. Like yeah. it is very in-depth to the same level as a lot of our products are in like steps to take and what you do to kind of implement these strategies. Mm-hmm. But we kind of pick and choose both based on what we have and what we need. So a couple times a month, we'll do an in-depth post, but we like to sprinkle in some of those casual posts because we have recently brought in a lot more people who are new to our brand.
Yeah.
When you have somebody who's new to your brand, the baseline that you are looking for is to build trust.
Right.
And you do that by saying, hey, I know a little bit about this. Our writers know a little bit about this. Let me teach you mm-hmm. for free. And they learn that and they say, okay, well, now I know that. Now I want to learn more. So then they go to the in-depth posts and then they go to your product. So we like to keep it a good balance of those. If I can get one each a week, I like that. If I can't, that's fine.
What is our current output?
We output 2 to 3 blog posts a week.
How many words?
Between 1,000 and 2,500 usually.
So these are pretty big honkers.
Yeah.
These are honkers.
Oh, yeah.
What they are.
Yeah.
That is a content marketing term
yeah.
for a long blog
it's
post.
Official.
It's official. So these are really long posts. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the higher level strategy that we're implementing because mm-hmm. it's changed a little bit. If you've been following Digital Marketer for a while, you know that our strategy was giving away that very amazing content. There was a focus on SEO and on searchability, but we weren't really attacking SEO specifically. How could I word
yeah,
that?
Yeah, well, a lot of it was that we were coming at SEO after the post had been written and yeah. trying to put it in there after the fact.
And that changed. We obviously hired Amanda, our SEO manager, to acquisitions manager, now director of marketing. So we have an SEO. We have a search engine.
Yeah. Optimizer.
Optimizer. Yeah. We have a search engine optimizer who's now leading the marketing of digital marketers. So obviously it's going to be very SEO friendly. Could you tell us a little bit about how that strategy works?
Yeah. So Amanda and I, when I first got hold of the blog as my own, we sat down and we're talking about how we can start with SEO in mind instead of putting it in after the fact. Because part of the issue that you run into with SEO and that strategy of putting it in afterwards is that you're then writing for the bots. You're not writing for the people who are reading it. Mm-hmm. If you start with SEO in mind, you have your target keyword before you actually ever put words on a page, mm-hmm. then you're writing for the person and integrating those keywords so that the bots will like it. It just creates a more cohesive piece, which then ranks. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that. I mean, we're ranking for, I think, double the keywords that we were ranking for a year ago. Mm-hmm. No, double since January.
Double since January. And that's when you owned the blog.
It's very, I mean, there's a lot of work. SEO is a long game. So there was a lot of work done before I ever got there.
Right.
That this is, we're now reaping the benefits for. But it's also, this strategy is helping a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're starting with the SEO keywords in mind, we can then frame content that fits like keywords that we're not ranking for or keywords that we want to push higher in mm-hmm. the rankings. And we can really catch those organic traffic viewers from the beginning, from the point where we're starting our content creation. We have those people in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it just creates a process that flows so much easier than trying to scramble at the last minute and get something up there.
Yeah.
It also means that we can then correlate our content creation with our promotion calendar, mm-hmm. which is something else that's been really critical in our content strategy lately, is that we don't want our promo calendar and our editorial calendar to run completely separate. That completely negates the point that we're going towards.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sit down and I plan out our ed calendar, at this point, we're a couple weeks out. So I plan like for most of the month and then that's kind of how we roll. I am looking at the promotions calendar and working with our promotions manager and categorizing what posts align with those products that we're going to promote and how I can create content that helps almost prime our customers or mm-hmm. prime new customers to be more receptive to that promotion.
Right. Yeah. Since doing that, have you found any new segments that we were missing before or ignoring before, or pieces of content that did extremely well that you thought, oh, this is kind of dumb? Is there anything you've thought, this is kind of dumb, why are we doing this? Or did you?
I mean, it's more
that, risky.
I feel like we've found that a lot of our previous content, because it was more strict with its strategic, like with its planning in the ed calendar.
Yeah.
Because there was less of a like forward thinking with keywords, it was all along similar lines. Mm-hmm. We also had the same people writing content for us. And so they had their areas of expertise that mm-hmm. they would go through and they excelled at that. And now I think we are at a place where I can reach out to new writers and to new contributors and kind of touch things that we haven't touched in the content creation before.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to write some stuff that's more business general.
Mm-hmm.
We had an emojis post that went out, I think, a month or two ago.
I remember that.
And people loved it. Mm-hmm. I could not explain that to you. I would say that most people know what most emojis are, but we found that people loved our emojis post on social. So why would we not then fill that gap in our content?
So now you are not only aligning your content with our SEO strategy. So tell me if this sounds right. So we have the top down, we have our keyword strategy, things mm-hmm. that we're ranking for, in addition to, you know, whatever promotion, those are kind of aligned along with like our acquisition
yeah.
strategy. Everything there is like top level.
Yeah.
And then when you move down, you have your content being the blog, because there's different kinds of content.
Yeah.
So you have your blog strategy, and then the social strategy connects to the blog strategy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the promo calendar. So you have, you know, everything's kind of feeding from one another.
Yeah. It's this nice little web that since, I mean, we all sit very close to each other, so that helps, but we also talk a lot about what's going on. If things are changing in one aspect, we definitely let each other know so that we can then adapt the calendar. Having our editorial calendar be so flexible recently, I think, has been integral with this strategy. It also means that then I'm helping edit and upload post day of, which can be tough, especially if you're the only one running your content, but it helps with our strategy.
What do you think got you to the point of being flexible? Is it a backlog?
Honestly, I think it was that when I first started, we had no backlog. We had nothing. And so I was working on a day-to-day basis anyways. And at that point, it didn't matter if I was working on the post that I had thought I was going to be working on or if I was working on a different one. So either way, I was going to be doing the same thing day in and day out. And so I also just really think this is something that we haven't done with our content strategy here. And I really want to see if it works. And it seems to be working. So,
I mean, it's much more holistic.
Well, and I think if part of your idea of creating a blog and creating this kind of free content is to build trust with your readers, you need to be able to give them what they want. Sure. But you also need to be able to give them what you think they should want. So if we're going to be sending out a promotion, we want to get them ready for it. Whether or not they're the same people who are then going to go buy, that's almost negligible. Because then that sets them up for the next time we put that item on sale. They've read that content. They're primed for that sale.
Yeah, they understand maybe why it's important or why it's... Yeah, so obviously we sell information products. What strategies have you seen for other types of industries like e-commerce? What are your inspirations across other brands for content marketing?
So I actually have like a super content crush on Bon Appetit magazine and their content strategy. It's so good. And I think they're in a sort of similar place where their product is their magazine. They're selling recipes and articles and things like that. And that's exactly what they're putting on their blog and what they're putting in their videos on YouTube and in their social media. It's all the same stuff, right? But I think because they draw you in with that just high quality content that they're giving away for absolutely free, they keep you coming back, right? You fall in love with the characters, you fall in love with the writers, you fall in love with the recipes, and then you go out and you spend $5 a year on their magazine because that's not very expensive.
Right? And you just made the most amazing strawberry, what did I make? The cherry tart. Biscuit cobbler.
The cobbler.
And then
you
made the nectarine tart. And you made the...
the cheesecake.
The burnt cheesecake. It was not burnt, but it was cheesecake. Yeah, it was, oh, I do love Bon Appetit.
I know. Our Mondays are much better with dessert Mondays.
Yeah. That's something new that we've been doing as well in the DM office. That is unrelated to any strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
A happiness strategy.
I mean, it's like an office happiness strategy.
So how have you found the reception of our content becoming, because we were probably pretty scared to go a little more broad, to go a little more generalized. We're very like, has to be tactical. It has to be step by step.
And that, I mean, that's what we've always done. We've always had really clear cut strategies and tactics and steps that these readers could take, right? Very broken down, very in depth. But I think with our readers, especially since we have so many people who are new to our brand or who maybe don't know as much about marketing, like we're here to serve all levels of marketers, right?
Right.
But if we're only catering to one level of marketer on our blog, I think we're missing a huge gap.
We're not building them. We're not getting to them to that point.
There has to be an entrance point. So now, I mean, now we're catering to the very beginner who literally doesn't know what digital marketing is. And then we're catering to the people who don't know, oh, well, I know about digital marketing. What about this specific strategy or what about this specific tool? Or I know I need to start on my social media strategy, but I don't know how to do anything. So here are some tools for you. I think it fits more of our audience. And maybe we're missing out on giving every person more content. But I think if we're hitting more of our audience, we're better serving the people that we're trying to sell to and trying to teach. I mean, that's ultimately our goal as the company.
Yeah, that makes sense. So on your end, you know, obviously we have these very strict guidelines that our contributors and outsourcers have to follow. How have those changed as our strategy has changed?
I think it means that we have to be a little bit pickier with who we have write for us. We have so many people reach out to us mm-hmm. saying they want to write for the blog, which is absolutely wonderful, right? And we want to include as many of those people as, you know, are qualified and are writing good content as we can, while at the same time managing my bandwidth. Like, right. I can't edit 15 posts a week.
Why not?
There's only so many hours in the week.
But what do you do all day?
Oh, lots of things.
<I'm just kidding. laughs> We'll talk about that soon. We'll explain. I think this is a good time to get clear on
Day in the life.
Yeah.
So, you know, once we kind of hone in on who we want to work with, mm-hmm. it's just a matter of having a productive feedback loop, I think, is really important when you're working with writers. Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing to go into a piece that somebody's written for you and just take the red pen to it and just chop it up. But I don't think that that creates a productive feedback loop, because then that writer doesn't necessarily trust their work with you. Mm-hmm. And what I want is that people trust their writing with us, right? We want to do them justice. We want to do the blog justice. And that only works when you can have this kind of positive atmosphere that you're writing and editing in. Mm. That does mean that I'll get a blog post proposal and I'll say no, because regardless of the quality of the writer, I don't think that that post will, in a reasonable amount of time, be to the level that we need it on the blog.
Yeah. What does that vetting process look like?
For most outside contributors, people who are not necessarily associated with anyone at the company, it means I ask for writing samples. Okay. And I ask for several proposals that I can kind of go through and say, we already have something on this, or, you know, that's just a little too complicated that we're looking for right now. But this one looks good, so let's mm-hmm. try this one. And then they send me an outline, and then I look at the outline and I say, I think we need something here, or I really don't think that that piece, that paragraph is going to serve our customers.
At that point, do they already think they're going to be published, or are they still hoping to be published?
I try to hedge my bets as much as possible, just okay. because I don't want to be in a position where we get through three rounds of edits and say, no, I know you spent 6 hours on this, but no.
Right. Okay.
So when I first get a proposal, or I first get somebody who I actually think will write for us, I send them our style guide. And our style guide breaks down this process. It breaks down that, like, yeah, you may send us a piece and we may get to the outline stage. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go on the blog. Mm-hmm. And you may get the piece all the way done and it may not fit our timing right. So we may hold it and it won't be published right away.
Right.
And so I think sending that information out to people really...
Setting, you know, expectations.
Assuming they read it, but...
Hopefully.
Yeah. I think that that sets the expectation where they know that it's a process.
Right. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, on the TNC end, it's like, I want to work with you on making sure a session idea makes sense.
Yeah.
Or like that it's, you know, something that we're looking for. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I just can't guarantee that it'll be a fit for this one. And, you know, mm-hmm. it might happen that we have a similar session going on this year by someone who is already going to be on our stage. Like, there's no doubt this person, you know, we work with all the time, or we're very, you know, maybe we're contracted to have them on stage. So it kind of just works out that way. I was going to ask, what is a pitch that you get the most often that you don't want to publish anymore or don't think you'll ever publish?
We get a lot of people who are very into their subject, right? So we'll get one person who is very educated and practiced in messenger marketing, or somebody mm-hmm. who is like all in on content marketing. Mm-hmm. I think posts that I have done a lot of recently are the tool posts. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll say people love tool posts mm-hmm. because I think it's easily consumable. It's something that they can look around at. It's fun, you know, in some ways. Mm-hmm. And everybody is looking for a new solution for their problem, right? But we have a lot of tool posts.
Yeah.
Especially recently. So, I mean, for now, I'm holding off on that for mm-hmm. sure.
Okay. That makes sense. And is there any, not any specific person, but is there a kind of pitch that you just kind of get? And I'm kind of thinking, like, do people most often want to send in their case studies and publish their case studies? Or, like, what is etiquette? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about blog contributor etiquette. What are the rules?
I think it honestly depends on who you're working with. With me, I'm pretty receptive to any idea that you have, as long as you're willing to work with me on it, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a case study, I'm all for your case study. But you can't come at a case study with us and say, you should only use this tool.
Mm-hmm.
You should be using my company. Like, our blog is not a place for you to sell your products.
Right. It's not even a place that we really sell our products.
No. We're pretty... We keep our CTAs where our CTAs go, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So as long as they're willing to, you know, get rid of the 15 links back to their company that they have in their blog post, I'm absolutely more than receptive to case studies or, hey, this is it. So I had a writer recently who wrote an article for us that used a tool as the example and as the kind of segue into their strategy. I didn't know until writing their author bio that they worked for the company that they used. That was perfect because they weren't too salesy. They weren't too promotional with their company's product. I understand, like, you work for a company, you're looking for backlinks if you're writing for a blog, but we're very protective of our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure that when they come to the blog, they know they're learning something they're not going to get sold to every time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's go into the day in the life.
Yeah.
What does a day in the life of the managing editor of the Digital Marketer blog look like?
It's a lot of emails, actually.
Yeah.
So on any given day, I'm writing emails back and forth with our freelancers who we work with regularly.
How many do we have right now?
Right now we have four. We share them with our product team. So we kind of split the difference on who has what project going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm generally sending them one or two assignments a week that they're working on. So sending them their assignments, editing their assignments, sending them new assignments, which takes a lot longer than I think most people expect it to. Because you have to have a piece's format in mind when you're writing the assignment. Mm-hmm. You have to gather at least some of the resources, right? We expect our writers to do their own research, but if I know that I want to include something, I'm going to send them that because I want to make sure that doesn't get missed in a miscommunication.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also working with our guest contributors who will send in their pieces, and it's, you know, the back and forth process with the drafts. And then I also am working on uploading the posts. So I am breaking down the Word doc, you know, formatting all the images, putting it into WordPress, making sure it aligns with our CTAs, all that.
Okay. That's a long day.
Yeah.
You recently published a post about working with freelancers and hiring with freelancers.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about, because I'm sure a lot of those of you listening who would be implementing a blog or content strategy, you might not have room for a Becky on your team, but maybe you have room for some freelancers, outsourcers on your team. So what's your process for vetting? Because obviously with guest contributors, you need the writing samples and you need the topic, but freelancers, it's a little different. What are you testing them for?
I think honestly, the biggest thing that I look for in a freelancer is how they communicate with me, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you have a guest contributor and they do one post and it's good, but it's not great, that's fine. Like, then we just won't work with them again.
Yeah.
If we have somebody who we have on a contract, we want to make sure that every step in the process is going smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always open about what our expectations are. I am understanding of deadline extension for sure.
Right.
But if it becomes a consistent thing, like, that's going to be an issue because clearly there's been a miscommunication in what we have time for and what we have need for on either end.
Yeah.
And so what I'm looking for when I'm looking for a freelancer is somebody who is A, willing to take critique, right? Because we are very specific with our voice and we're very specific with what we want. And if somebody's not necessarily there right away, I'm not as worried about that because if they're willing to learn and they're willing to take, you know, my edits into consideration in future posts, absolutely they'll get there.
Yeah.
And so along those lines, we want somebody who is flexible because we have a lot of projects change last minute all the time. I feel like every week there's a post that we change when it's going to go live and we change what's going to go in it. So somebody who's willing to work with me on that and say, you know, they're 2 days into writing a post and I'm like, hey, can you change this one thing?
Was that a part of your interview? Did Matt end up doing that for your interview assignment?
I wrote show notes for my interview assignment. Notes.
Did he do the thing? So Russ, who used to run our blog very famously when he was hiring and interviewing Matt Douglas, our former managing editor after Lindsay Martyr. I feel like I need to mention everyone. I know we have
a bunch of people
here
who've had their hands in the
yeah,
blog.
Like everyone has helped build it to where it is
yeah,
today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, all these people are amazing geniuses. But when Matt was doing the assignment, Russ assigned him, I think, a specific podcast or something to write notes on. And then like the Sunday before it was due, emailed him to say, oh, that was the wrong one. I actually need you to do this one.
Interesting.
So that it would make him like, you know, to see what he would do, to yeah. see if he would like get it done quick, you know, because that happens
all the time. It definitely
happens.
It happens. Like I said, it happens almost every week.
Yeah. Every single week.
I don't think he ever did that with me, but he could have been planning on it because I got my assignment in like the next day or
yeah.
something like that.
He definitely had thought about it. I think I remember talking about it after your interview. So how did that feel? You went from being a copy editor underneath Matt, and Matt decided he wanted to do more, just focus purely on product. So the blog shifted over to you, and then you kind of just took it. Were those processes built, or did you build them all out yourself?
I mean, I was definitely trained on the uploading process for sure, mm-hmm. right? And we had already sort of talked about, you know, this is how we frame our content. This is the caliber of content that we're looking for. And then, you know, I've had editing experience in previous jobs, so that wasn't as much of an issue for me. But I think a lot of the actual, like, working with freelancers process and working with outside writers was something that I picked up right around the time or right before. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty quick transition.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's always been around. He's still around. So I can, if I have something that I'm unclear on, I absolutely ask him.
Yeah.
So I think it was smoother than I had kind of expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I mean, it's an intimidating thing to be just handed a blog.
Handed a blog. Especially a blog with as much history
yes.
And
readership.
And readership yeah. as ours. Yeah. What are some of the newer things you've been doing that are exciting to you?
I am really excited about the kind of fun content that we've been writing. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny. When Amanda and I were kind of formatting the strategy, we were like, well, we don't want to be BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
Period. We don't want to be BuzzFeed or that kind of like listicle content, yeah. right, that has no substance or anything like that. But we kind of want to be BuzzFeed just a little bit, right?
Just a little bit,
that,
yeah.
That fun content that you just like roll through and it's entertaining, but it's also mm-hmm. educational. And it's been really fun to like think of new things that we haven't written about on the blog.
Yeah.
And like, how can we serve our customers? Because our customers are marketers, but they're also just business people,
yeah.
right? They need this kind of breadth of knowledge
mm-hmm.
that they weren't necessarily getting from our blog. And we want to keep them on our blog. So we want to give them everything they need.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so I have two kind of final questions.
Yeah.
My first one is, I want to know, what is one thing you want the world to know about running a blog?
I think the one thing I want people to know is that there's a lot of content out there. There is so much content out there. And so nothing you put out there necessarily is going to be unique. What is going to set your content apart is your voice. And having your voice as a company or as a, you know, a managing editor or a content manager, anything like that, having your voice really honed in and consistent is going to keep your readers coming back because they hear a person, they don't hear a blog.
Hmm.
And it also gives you an angle for any opinions that you're writing about, any strategies that you have. They're not new. I mean, you have millions of people out there marketing. So what sets you apart is your voice and your style.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like maybe that you covered my last question then. My last question is, if you could tell the world anything about content marketing in general, what would you tell them?
I think what I would tell content marketers as a whole is that it's okay to give stuff away for free. That's got to be your whole thing, because what you want to do is build enough trust with your audience and with your potential customers that they then become customers.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all have those brands that we're passionate about, right? That you will buy anytime they email you a sale just because you like the brand. I want to be that brand, and I think every content marketer should want to be that brand that just people love.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that with your content. I mean, you also get that with your product, obviously. If you have good content marketing and a bad product, like, you're kind of screwed. But if you have both, you're sold.
Perfect. Well, Becky, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was really fun to have you and chat about content marketing.
Yeah, it was fun.
And the blog. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and three unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.